following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is officially that time. It is the best Tuesday we've had all week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn, and today in the wrong studio, but you guys don't know that because it's radio, right? But we're in the Winging It studio, making it up as we go. But I did bring in, fortunately, a seasoned pro as a guest today. Thank you for joining me today, Mr. Barry Robinson.
Thank you, David.
And for those of you that don't know, Barry is one of the smartest guys I know. Do not try to sneak trivia past this guy. I'm just telling you. And we have, he is, what's your formal title right now?
General Manager of Ameritile.
Okay, so that's the formal, because I just know him as my title guru, right?
I will take that.
Yeah, so all of the things that when it comes to, hey, I've got to figure out some kind of real estate transaction. Actually, it kind of go to you for most real estate transactions generically. So like if I've got a question about something in real estate, you're just a fantastic wealth of knowledge.
Well, thank you.
So I actually think it might be kind of interesting to, we may talk a little bit about that because I know you get to see a lot in real estate, just the, so I have a few questions that may, I don't even know if you're allowed to answer these, so you could tell me if you're not. How's the transaction volume these days?
The transaction volume has decreased.
Okay.
So just from July to August, it's down about 6%.
Okay.
Year over year, it's probably down about 16% from last year.
Okay. So, and of course that's, I think that's your internal numbers at Ameritile, right? So versus, or is that industry-wide?
Oh, that'd be Douglas County, right.
Okay, so
yeah,
Douglas
industry,
County.
I'm not sure, but as okay. far as Douglas County.
Yeah. And, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. Does Douglas County track pretty close? Or is that, is it, is, are we really needing to be like a lot of things in real estate? It's going to be regional and location specific.
Yeah, real estate is always local. But what's unique about Douglas County is we don't have a lot of inventory. So that's our challenge right now. It's, a lot of people think it's interest rates because they're higher, a lot higher.
Right.
You know, they're double what they were a year ago, roughly. Mm-hmm. But it's really that we don't have that three-bedroom, two-bath house available for sale. We hadn't had the build-up in construction. We have a lot of people that don't want to list their property for sale because they don't know where they're going to move to.
Sure.
And they also don't want to sell their house because of interest rates because they might have a 2.5% or 3% loan right now. They sell their house. They buy a new one at 7%. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, we talked about that with, normally I've got Matthew in here, or often I should say, we have guests all the time, sometimes with Matthew, right?
Right.
He's on vacation right now. So I think it might be a staycation, workcation, but you know what? He's young, and so if he's got the energy for that, God love him. But he's sort of in that situation of shopping, but inventory, exactly as you described, super yeah. low, and the rates are unattractive. And it's interesting because it doesn't seem like the demand has really shifted that much, even though rates have gone up.
Yeah, again, gets back to inventory because our time on the market is pretty quick still. It's just now inching up to about 3 months, which historically in Douglas County, that's still pretty fast to sell properties. And we have, like I said, if you have that three-bedroom, two-bath home in Hillcrest or somewhere, mm-hmm. You're going to get multiple offers quickly. And pricing, which usually when the market slows down, pricing decreases quite a bit. And we've not seen that in Douglas County. Pricing is staying pretty steady. It's down slightly, but it's pretty stable, which, again, is unique in this market because when you have supply-demand issues, well, in our case, we have demand, not enough supply. But at the same time, we have supply, not enough demand, if that makes any sense, with the interest rates. Therefore, pricing is staying about what it's been for the last few years.
Yeah, that is. Well, yeah, it's, I'm going to try to summarize it this way. I always use interest rates as a, you know, code for the cost of capital, right? What's it cost somebody to access money?
right? And if interest rates are higher, the cost of capital is higher. So it just means that you're going to spend more to borrow money. That means that you have less available potentially to buy something with. So that should be a reduction in demand. But we've had this simultaneous low supply that seems to have kept the price pretty stable. Am I unpacking that about right?
No, you're exactly right.
Yeah, and this really does get back to the core of, I really think at the fundamental level for pretty much all financial discussions. We can talk about the regulatory environment. We can talk about economic conditions. We can talk about demographics. I mean, all those things are interesting and relevant, but to what? And it's price discovery, which ultimately boils down to supply and demand.
Right. And most people buy a house based on what they can afford as far as monthly payment. Mm-hmm. With higher interest rate, you have a higher monthly payment. Even though over the course of time, real estate has utility, meaning you get to live in it, does it really matter in some sense what you pay for it today? Because at some point in time, it's going to be more than it is now. And you get to live in it while that more is happening, that increase. It doesn't mean every year markets go up and down, but over the course of time, real estate always gets higher.
And it will, right? I mean, people sit there and go, well, okay, it's true. You could destroy a piece of property, right? You could not maintain it, and it could functionally decline in value because you've not maintained it. But it goes up because from an inflationary perspective, the U.S. government and the banking system has designed inflation into the system. There is a target rate of inflation that they're intending to have happen. And probably not well understood, I would guess, for a lot of folks, but one of the core things that drives that long-term inflation, it's not just economic growth and it's not the manipulation of money supply. It is stable population and population increase, right? So you can build that in because if you have a population increase, and you're increasing the amount of currency, you're sort of offsetting a little bit because you got more people competing for the currency. It gets a lot more concerning if you have a decreasing population because you have demand destruction through demographics while simultaneously watering down the currency.
Right, and that's another benefit of Douglas County. We have such a beautiful place to live, a desirable place to live that people are now discovering that mm-hmm. we have people moving in, which also puts pressure on that supply side.
Yeah.
Because people are buying it. And a lot of people coming in have cash. So interest rates don't really affect them in a sense.
In a sense, true. And plus, still, we're somewhat of an undiscovered market, I think. I don't know if this is still true, but at one point somebody said that Douglas County was the most affordable real estate on Interstate 5 between San Francisco and Seattle.
And that was probably true at one point. I think we're inching up. I think that discrepancy is, but it historically has been true because...
Right.
We sit in the middle. We're on I-5. We're one of the undiscovered places on I-5.
Right.
And we have, again, just the most beautiful place, especially this time of year or springtime. Where would you rather live? I would not rather live anywhere.
Yeah, it's true. We're in convertible season, right? So if you have a car that you could take the top off on, we're in that season now. It's just right. It's not too hot, not too cold. It's just amazing. And I love this time of year, these transition seasons. Of course, I'm lucky. I don't really suffer from allergies anymore. Kind of outgrew those, which is a good deal. But for those of you out there that either hate the spring or the fall because there's always some kind of something in the air that gets you, all right, I hear you. But it's beautiful right now. Although you could tell I'm starting to wake up before the sun. It's been, you know, for a little while now, for a few weeks, I've been waking up before the sun, and I'm thinking, that's less cool. You know, get out in the morning, get a little exercise, get the body moving, and watch the sunrise instead of being there early with, I'm thinking, huh, you know this is going to get worse, right?
Right.
So, well, you know, I want to touch on a point that you brought up. It's one that maybe doesn't get discussed a ton, but I'm really curious just your take on it and where we think how it may continue to impact our markets here. So we've talked a lot about supply already. There's this real shortage of inventory in Douglas County. What are some of the things that you think are contributing to that shortage?
Well, that's a great question because we talked just a minute ago about you take regulation out and all the government, money supply things, but the government does have a huge impact why we don't have as much housing. We got land use laws that restrict us from building. we have so much regulation to build a house that the percentage of the cost of a house is really high for the fees and all of the things that go with the regulation, which makes the pricing higher.
Sure.
Therefore, makes it less affordable. Therefore, it makes it harder to buy. And I was talking to a builder about a month ago, and they said because of the government regulation that many times they can't, their goal is to build a house that's 80% of the median income of a community.
Okay.
Therefore, 80% of the people, if you're, let's say,
I follow
on average, 50,000 medium income, 80% of that
would be 40, right?
Right. So if you could afford a monthly payment of X with that income, they could build a house. They used to be able to build a house for that amount.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can't. Only about 10% of the communities that they build in Oregon, can they meet that target.
Okay. That's really wild. And I think super relevant to, you know, here we are on the True Wealth Show talking about, we've mentioned this before. When we talk about structural issues in a marketplace, okay, this is when the underpinning elements in the marketplace are, they complicate matters and increase cost, right? And I'm sort of oversimplifying by saying, oh, they complicate it and increase it. But the regulations are a real example of this. I mean, I think we can unpack several things, even from at just the business operational level, things like corporate activity tax, right? A tax on gross, that's basically a tax on the margins of the business. That's a phantom sales tax. That gets passed on to a consumer, right? And there's lots of those. But I think about some of the costs. I think at one point, and this was a few years ago, we were looking at this. It was about $30,000 worth of permitting and such before you put a shovel in the ground to start even moving dirt. And that to me was just extraordinarily high. I want to talk a little bit more about this, but my understanding is we have to take one of those evil corporate profit breaks first.
So evil.
Yeah. So we're gonna grab a quick break, and when we come back, let's look into that a little bit more. The structural elements that are influencing the supply side of real estate here in Douglas County with my special guest, Barry Robinson. My name is Dave Littlejohn, and you're listening to the True Wealth Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, and we are back from, of course, our exceptional profit break, which it's, you know, you got to do that. And for those of you that stuck around, thank you, because, you know, now this station continues to operate. So we're delighted here. And we get to continue to bring you all kinds of information. My special guest today, Mr. Barry Robinson.
Thank you again, David.
Yep. And just a reminder, if you are just figuring out, guys, you can grab a podcast on this thing. It'll be published at our website tomorrow. Go to littlejohnfs.com and you can get connected with that. You got all the backlog of what we've done in the past, too. So you can listen until your heart's content. We got 6+ years of podcasts going on there. It's enough to handle your commute for a while.
Right.
Okay, so we left our listeners on this cliffhanger of structural issues impacting the supply side of real estate in our community. And to me, structural is when you start to get, let's just call them financial barriers, be they economic or government imposed through regulation or other restriction. What are some of the things? I was baffled. I mean, the statistic again, you said that the builders can't build for, how do you describe the, for a listener?
80%. So this was a statewide builder, but their target is to be able to build a house that a person making or the family making 80% of the median average income or median income in that community could afford.
Okay.
So they do the math and say you can, you know, $1,200 a month payment, you could own a $300,000 house.
Right.
So we'll build a $300,000 house. They can't build a house for $300,000 in Douglas County.
Yeah. And so my question is, why? What is it that's making that the case?
Yeah, so there's all kinds of system charges. There's all kinds of government regulations that just add to the bureaucracy of the building the house. There's just a number of things that through Oregon land use laws that makes land unavailable. Like in our area, we have only so much land that we can actually build homes on. And that gets worse as you go north. Like in Portland, they can only go up. Right? Yeah. They don't let people. So if you're in Portland even, and you want to build in Portland, which this will sound
my bias.
Like, why would you want to live in Portland? But
I'm
if you did choose
these
to,
days right. too, like Portland's got some. They're not just financial issues going on in Portland right now.
But they have to buy an older home, pay a fortune for it,
right.
tear it down, and build a new house just so they can build a house in that area because they can't. Their land use is restricted. And part of that's because the government, the city bureaucracy there wants people to be closer. They want more dense population. I'm not saying people in Portland are dense, but they don't vote like we do, so maybe they are. There goes my bias.
I know. Right. Hashtag true story.
Right.
Go on.
but there are things the government can impose on us that cause everything to be just takes more time, and more time's money, as we know. So if it takes 9 months to build a house, I used to have a customer that could build a house about every 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a good living by building that many houses in a year, where then it got stretched out where it takes about 4.5 months. Well, he can't make the same living in four. You know, so now he has to either
charge more for the same product so that he can survive.
Or add a bunch of employees that now he has this overhead that he didn't have before. So if things slow down, then he has that issue. And so there's just this whole dynamic of time.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me because it's so many layers of it, right? We've seen the bureaucracy that's affecting the supply of raw materials, right? And we know, for example, the availability of lumber. It's a real sensitive issue in this area, of course. And for those of you out of area that are listening, you probably don't get the issues the same way that we are when we're in it. And let me say we, because you know, living here in Douglas County, we're just wrapping up forest fire season, right? Most people have like baseball season.
Right.
And we get forest fire season, where there were days where our students were told to stay indoors and they could not do outdoor activities because there was so much smoke in the air that it was considered a health hazard, okay? This is the kind of stuff where, you know, they used to have smog warnings in LA. We have forest fire warnings in low density populations in rural Oregon where our forests burn. Much of it because of, and I don't know all the details about this, right? Like, so I'm dangerous when I say this. So this is my very underinformed opinion, okay? But previous policy where the federal government, first they hadn't taken over a lot of lands, then they sort of federalized a bunch of lands. And initially the policy was to sort of subdue forest fires. And after 3 or 4 decades, there was a change in policy to allow fires to run their course. But the suppression of those fires had caused the natural materials that were falling in the forest to build up to a point that now when things catch fire, they burn much more intensely. And rather than burning through a forest, which the intention is, a lot of forests can benefit from a little bit of fire. It cleans out the underbrush. It thins things out. It allows trees to grow because they get more sunlight. It puts nutrient back in the soil. There's a lot of things to that cycle that are beneficial, right? I know I'm way off the course here, but for all of our listeners, just know this is part of our DNA here, is that it's a little bit good, but if it gets too hot, it will kill the trees, right? Trees can survive forest fires if it burns underneath them and not doesn't destroy the canopy, right? They're pretty hardy, but if it gets hot enough, it kills the trees and it scorches the earth at the same time. And now it takes a lot longer for the earth to heal. And then you have to regrow an entire forest. And on top of that, now you've killed trees that are still usable because it's the outside of the tree that's growing, not the inside. And so you can still harvest that tree and use it as merchantable timber. But because of environmental regulation, oftentimes that cannot be harvested. So then it goes to rot. And what does it do? It becomes more material that burns again
and further
pushes out how long that forest takes to heal.
Yeah, and that's a big challenge. Like, we have some great local companies like Roser Forsprog, Sloan Rock Timber, Swanson, Seneca. You throw all those private owners in there. When there's a fire, they get right in there. They start harvesting. They get those logs on the market, and then they start replanting.
Right.
Unfortunately, the private ownership in Douglas County of timber is very small.
Yeah.
Although it's hundreds of thousands of millions of acres, it's a lot of acreage. But
it's a percentage of the total.
Exactly. But when a fire happens on federal land, they don't allow them to go in and harvest right after. And they don't get those logs on the market. So now you just have rotting value. If you look at Douglas County, most of our value is in our trees. And you have all this rotting value, and all it does is adds more fuel to the next fire that comes through the same area again. And so it perpetuates this problem where, again, our private landowners, they get in there, they harvest, they replant. We're, you know, now 25, 30, 40 years from now, we have more trees. But under the federal stuff, like I said, the environmental challenges and the environmental impact of lawsuits and all that kind of stuff, it keeps us from harvesting, which seems like the most common sense thing to do. Is if it burns, go cut those bad dead trees, sell them. It pays for the forest fighting, and you replant the timber. So it doesn't make any sense at all.
And it, since it's a renewable resource, one, it helps. I mean, it does to a certain extent, depending on who's doing the harvesting and how. I mean, it impacts the price of things, but it should, if anything, lower the price to market, which would relieve some of the costs to build. And the real irony of this whole feedback loop to me is that the environmental rationale is that we need to protect our forests. But once they burn, if we don't go in there and manage them, what happens is the ecosystem changes.
Right.
And this is a very real thing. If you don't believe me, go look up the ecosystem shifts from being a coniferous forest to a deciduous forest. And that's a different ecosystem.
Right. And if you look at our local companies, again, we have phenomenal families that own these companies. They care generationally about the timber.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they hire foresters. There is no better environmentalist than a forester.
Right.
And so groups that come in and say, oh, just lock up your trees, they're not doing us any favors. They're not benefiting the forest because the forest needs to regenerate. And fires are natural sometimes. And it happens. Like you said, there are some benefits to it. Why do we waste all that timber that can be used to employ people, to build homes, do all those things, just to watch it burn again? And then once it burns two or three times, then like you talked about, the scorched earth, nothing will grow there anymore. So you have no value at all,
right?
Even
and
in
then,
the land.
And it ruins the habitat too. So it affects the animal life. The whole ecosystem gets impacted by it. So yeah, I realize we just went off like really on a left turn here, but I do think it's very relevant in the scheme of it all goes back to like these are policies that then influence the supply side of materials that go into housing. Because what's the number one thing in housing? The wood products, right? I mean, that's what we build our houses out of around here. So wood products. And, you know, we're making them harder to access and cost more. And it doesn't really make intuitive sense to me.
Right. Plus, when you're not harvesting, you're not maintaining roads. You don't have as many crews out there. The best defense for fires is building logging roads.
Yeah,
getting
access,
out there.
Be able to get in there so people can access. Even if you were just going to let something burn, you could still put a fire line up. Because I think a lot of people, especially if you're like on the East Coast or something and you're unfamiliar and you're listening to this and you're going, what are they talking about? A logging road is access so that people can get in there to put in place fire lines. That's where they intentionally cut trees down and build up a gap between the forest so that the fire can burn out and not leap over to the forest and continue, right? So it's a break in the forest that you can physically create. You're not out there using hoses to fight these fires usually. They're using axes and bulldozers to cut down trees to arrest how far the fire makes it. So, but yeah, if you can't get into the forest, you really can't do much.
Right, so that's been the big shift is the logging and the forest. The federal forests, they're supposedly sell so much timber in a year, but yet they never meet that goal. And it's a much reduced number than it has historically been, which in Douglas County, that's a big deal because our whole governmental structure was based on timber receipts.
Yeah. And you're saying that the funding for our government, a lot of it came from those timber receipts.
When so much of our land is owned by the federal government. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just real quickly, the basic idea, and I'm oversimplifying here again, but if you've heard of the concept of eminent domain, right? So that's like you have a piece of property and they need to build a freeway. Then the government comes in and says, you may privately own it, but we're going to take it for a freeway. But we're going to pay you fair market value for it so that at least you're not completely getting hosed on the deal. And the people that are losing the property are going to probably think they're getting hosed anyway. But that's what the intention of eminent domain was. It's kind of what it was like when the federal government federalized Forest and Douglas County, and the agreement was, we will give you a safety net of revenue to replace what we have confiscated in this federal land grab, if you will. And later on, they reneged on it. And, you know, there's been battles ever since for the funding mechanism for our county. Now, I'm the first person to say we probably should figure out a different funding mechanism. Like, as best we can, like, how could we drive other economic activity that would encourage that? But I'm also the first to say, wait a second, we got hosed on this deal. And the government shouldn't, because we are a smaller voting bloc, steamroll us. They should do the right thing, which is you took the land, you need to compensate appropriately for it. And it was an ongoing structure.
Right. Another thing, too, is we grow the greatest trees in the entire world.
True.
The Douglas fir is a great building tree, and we have an abundance of it. Let us use it for what we can. And Douglas firs at some point fall down and die.
Yeah.
So why not harvest them? And I know people don't like the cornfield type mentality of raising trees, but really that's kind of how we should look at it. It just takes 40 or 50 years to grow a tree up to harvest it. And then we plant more trees. And in Oregon, we plant trees. So we take one down, we put three in, and it's a great system if we can do it.
Exactly. Right? But for trees, two men enter, one, wait, no, the other way around.
Yeah. So if you have the greatest resource, right? If you have the greatest resource in the world, why not utilize them?
Did I really just make a Thunderdome reference on True Wealth? You know, we got to take a break on that one. We'll regroup. All right. So we've talked about trees. We're going to talk more about the supply and demand and housing in Douglas County, where I get to quiz Barry Robinson on fun stuff. But we got to take a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
Barry Robinson.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And we are back for the next segment of the True Wealth Show, where I know we have one more evil corporate profit break, but we don't have to take it yet, which is good. Barry, thanks again for being here. And we're going to reel it back in because apparently I took it wasn't a left turn. I guess it was a hard right, I was told, discussing our forest fire and forest management theory, which, again, I don't know as much as I should. I think I just know the talking points, which makes me probably naive and dangerous.
Well, and I've lived here my whole life, and the only reason I was able to go to college because I was able to work in the mill, and I worked for DFPA fighting forest fires, and it is frustrating when you see that all those beautiful trees that could be used for good for us as humans are just sitting to let burn up.
Yeah. Well, what broke my heart was the glide fires where there were a bunch of waterfalls that were close to the Highway 138, which was at one point practically on the federal scenic byway tour. I think it was one step shy of being a federal landmark for being a beautiful highway. And a bunch of it has just been destroyed.
Yes.
And so in my lifetime, it will be usable again, but it will never be what it was in my lifetime.
Right.
So that's pretty sad to see. And I think it was preventable. That's the issue. So, you know, we had the resources to not have that occur, but because of what I believe is failed policy, that's where we went with it. But we're not going to continue down this path.
No, we are not.
We're going to talk a little bit more about, this
Oregon.com football?
We can. I will say that it was a real close one last Saturday, and then they kicked off.
Right.
But still, props to Hawaii. It was a beautiful night. I think Hawaii as a guest team was spoiled, okay. Right? Because it was a beautiful night. Great for football. Great night for football. And, we'll see what happens with the Pac-2 next year. That's going to be an interesting one. That league's going to be tough to watch. As far as our real estate discussion, though,
right.
We were talking about some of the things. So what kind of inventory? I mean, maybe – I don't know why you'd know. You're not necessarily in – I mean, you're in the title side of it. Like when transactions occur, you guys see them.
Correct. We have realtors that – conduct the transaction. Yeah. We're the trusted third party in the middle that makes sure mm-hmm. everything's done correctly and closes on time and make sure that the property is vested properly and that it has access and all those types of things. But the real estate transaction, again, is between the parties and the realtors.
Yeah, I always say you guys clean up the details in a lot of respects.
That's a good way to say it.
Right. The realtors may package the deal. Like, how are these sellers going to agree to make this transaction happen? But you guys make sure that it's tidy and that it can happen.
Well, the neat thing, the thing the title industry does is you have a buyer and a seller who don't know each other, don't trust each other, have no reason to believe that either could live up to their end of the agreement. And the buyer has money and the seller has a deed, and they both give those to the title company, in this case, Amerittitle for me. And we make sure that the seller gets the money and the buyer gets the deed. And then we provide title insurance that makes sure if that deed, if there's something wrong in the chain of that title, that they have a clean title. And that's basically what we do.
Okay. So this one, I did not prep Barry for this question, by the way. But I'm curious, have you all had any kind of title dispute of significance or note in recent memory?
Well, there's always, because title companies, we go back, it's an interesting business because normal insurance, if you go to a car insurance, they're insuring the future. So you buy your insurance and you go crash your car 2 weeks from now, they pay a claim. If you crashed a car 2 years ago, they don't care, your current person. Now it might care about their rates and stuff.
But, right. Are you going to do it again?
Right. But title insurance, we go back to the original land patent from the federal government to that first owner, whoever that was, and come forward to the date of the sale. And when that closes, we're ensuring that from that moment all the way back to the original 1800 whatever, that the title is good. So you can imagine that amount of time, there can be things that are missed or aren't recorded properly or could be fraudulent. There might be a forged deed out there. There might be the wrong person signing the deed. There's all kinds of things that can happen. And we have land, so it's always being divided and split up and built on, and so you could have encroachments. There's a lot to it, but we insure the past, where normal insurance insures the future.
Yeah, see, this is where I have to give you, like, the most backhanded compliment, okay? This will be fun. As he keeps going, like, oh, boy. Knowing you and knowing Amerittitle and the thoroughness that you all vet a title transfer, because I would argue that there's probably nobody does it better than you. That if I were Brand X Title, you guys seem so good at this that I could just not bother doing my research if you were the last transaction.
I feel good about the compliment. I'm not going to say we're perfect or infallible, but what we do try to do is fix problems quickly. We actually have our president, she was famous for this. She said, fix it big and fix it fast. So if something's wrong, we try to fix it. Because we truly believe in the integrity of the public record,
mm-hmm.
which means all the documents in the public record, which you can imagine is tens, hundreds of thousands of documents, that we want those to be accurate. So we try to fix things before the problem happens.
Sure.
And we have dedicated people right here in Douglas County. We're the only title company that does all our work right here in Douglas County. And I think that gives us a little bit better feel for the marketplace,
mm-hmm.
because we know of common issues or something on a property. Maybe that subdivision years ago had some access issue. We're probably aware of it. We also go out if one of the big things in title world is encroachment, where someone built something on your property. They may not have realized it at the time, but now you're selling your property and you have this issue, or they're selling their property and they have an issue. And we actually still go out and look to see if that fence line there, is that building's there, if it's encroaching, and then we deal with it at that point. So we're one of the few companies that actually still does that.
That's actually really comforting to hear, right? Now, reason to me, of course, is I think there's some assumptions. I have heard this rumor, right? Now, I'm not subscribing to this rumor, but I've heard this rumor that suggests that, you know, the last title company has already cleared all of this stuff. And, you know, we can look and it was only 3 years ago. What are we spending money on title insurance for right now if it's already been cleared and the chain of custody is clear and that this is we're passing the baton to the next owner? Why is this a requirement and the cost associated and so forth? Right. I mean, I hear this.
Right.
And, you know, and of course, my very simple response, which I'd love to hear more from you, is, well, do you want to own that liability? And I like the concept of insurance saying, well, I self-insure for small risks, but I insure with somebody else for big risks.
Right. If you look at the percentage of title insurance policy versus the transaction itself, it's really small.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that it's inconsequential and it's real money, but insurance policies, like anything, are for the current policyholder. So you might have bought or purchased a piece of property. You got title insurance at that time. Good for you. And then now you're selling it. Well, your buyer can't rely on your policy. Your buyer has to have their own policy. And there could have been mistakes, which, again, we're very fortunate in Douglas County. We have three really good companies. We do thorough work. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud of Douglas County Title Companies. I'm on the state board for the Oregon Escrow Council, and not all communities have the quality that we have locally.
Right.
So I feel good about that. But there can be something missed. But, again, the policy is only insuring the current person. But when you're a seller, you're signing what we call a warranty deed. It's a deed allowed in Oregon, and you're saying that from the beginning of time to that point you signed that deed, that everything's good about that title. Do you want to take on that liability? And will your buyer accept your guarantee?
Right.
Right? I don't know anybody has the wherewithal as an individual.
Well, I'm not going to do it. That LLC right. that owns nothing is going to do it for me.
Right. So that's where title insurance comes from, because, again, we issue a policy that has our strength behind it, which is substantial,
sure.
that says everything is good, and if it isn't, then we'll fix it. So that's why you get title insurance on that next transaction, because it's insuring you, the new buyer, and it relieves the seller of that liability that something might have been wrong in the past. Now, maybe there was something missed in a title policy before, and they have some recourse back to that title company.
I was just, can you guys do that? Could you go? I mean, if you catch an error that. Can you roll back to previous?
No, because title audits? Because we're not a party to that transaction. We're, again, a neutral third party. We're issuing our own insurance. That title company issued theirs, company before that. But it does give us comfort that if we see that a property's been insured, you know, three or four times in the past,
Somebody's been willing to buy that liability.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
That, I mean, yeah, intuitively that makes sense.
We still have to do our own research. We still go back to the beginning time. We have our own database, what we call title plant. But it makes us feel more comfortable when other title companies have insured it. Because, again, we have good companies around here.
Yeah. So perhaps a topic for another time. We may even, you know, have to bring you back. I feel like this, we've talked about this offline before, but it just seems like title is a really natural fit for something like a blockchain style transaction, you know, where once records are validated, they get sort of memorialized in this method of coding that, you know, one block is tied to the next, to the next, to the next, so that it remains sort of sovereign, if you will.
Right. And it's interesting too, because we read every document, because each county in Oregon is its own county clerk, has its own county records. Each company has their own title plant. And we read every document that associates with that property. And
When I hear that, it sounds affordable, what you guys do.
Right.
It's just the hours involved to go through all of that, like hot dog. Right. So, yeah, I said that because I don't know what else to say for something that's that outlandish. I would not want to read through all those legal documents personally.
We did a transaction once that had over 10,000 documents that we had to review. Just imagine that.
The danger of having your mind go numb, very high.
Yes.
10,000 documents.
Well, we probably just bored the entire audience, so we got to get back to trees or something.
Okay, well, we'll get back to, maybe we'll do this, is if you're in Douglas County and you're looking for a home, where might be the things that you, or what are some of the things that you could do that might help you? Okay, so we'll cover that and some other quality ideas right after this important break. Till then, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
Barry Robinson.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And we are back for this, the home stretch, the True Well Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today,
Barry Robinson.
And Barry, we've covered some ground, right? And I want to get back to just the housing's tricky in Douglas County, right? What are some options? I mean, if folks are out there and they're trying to figure this out, okay, what are some of the things? I mean, you just brought this really interesting stat at the break, like how many houses are for sale by owner, okay?
Yeah, it's pretty high, actually, in Douglas County. I mean, we have some really good realtors, and I always suggest you use a professional, but if you have a certain skill set, you want to sell your house by yourself, then
do that. But if somebody's trying to sell by themselves and you're trying to buy, right, I think the selling, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, if you're looking for a house, for sale by owner may be tricky because maybe they haven't gotten it into the RMLS system. It may not be in a lot of the typical search engines. So that means that you may have to do more homework to find inventory that's not discovered. That could literally mean driving around and looking at yard signs at times. So this is also why I like realtors, because the realtors I know that are good at their craft, they literally do that. Right. They'll just kind of they'll canvas neighborhoods. And here's another thing, kind of a shout out for realtors is pocket listings. OK, so do you guys ever talk about pocket listings?
I've had several clients say that they knew a realtor and they said, oh, I know about this house and it wasn't on the market and they got it.
Yeah. And that's exactly what a pocket listing is the realtor knows that somebody is thinking about selling. And what will happen is you're speaking to them and they go, oh, you know what? Let me go inquire to these people. And it may be just the right timing in their life. They don't really want to deal with a lot of time on the market. And you're just matched up really quickly and the transaction happens really fast. So I think there is something to be said for having a relationship with a quality professional for those reasons.
Right. Another thing we were talking about on break too is the amount of private money. Owner carry type transactions in Douglas County. There's a lot of that. We at Meritidal, we're the only company that collects payments for people in Douglas County. We call it account servicing. Some people call it collection escrow, whatever the term is. But a seller sold, instead of you going to the bank and getting money to buy it, and instead of giving them cash and they just put it in the bank and get low interest rate, they want the payments, and so we're the company that collects those. But we serve over 12,000 people monthly at my Meritidal office here in Roseburg.
That's payments. That's pretty huge. It's also pretty important to think about, because consider if you something called an installment sale. Okay, this is something that it's a tax scenario where maybe you don't want to sell your house all at once and pay the capital gain, especially for rental properties. Rental properties installment sales are more popular because primary residence, you get a big capital gains exemption, but rental properties, you often don't. And so if you sell it and incur all of the taxes at the transaction, then what do you end up with? You end up with the tax bill all at once. installment sale, which is essentially what you're kind of talking about, is the owner is the bank, but you're not selling it in one transaction and collecting interest. You're actually collecting fractional payments and then incurring the tax as you go. So you're sort of co-ownership as you transition out of the equity. And don't just go do this blindly on your own, right? You're going to want to talk with a tax professional. You're going to want legal paperwork in place. And you're likely to want somebody like Barry helping you manage this process so that it happens cleanly and legally and that the IRS blesses it.
Right. And again, in Douglas County, why we have so many owner carry type properties, especially as interest rates, we've seen a lot more activity as interest rate rise, because the seller is saying, well, I'm happy with 5 or 6% on my house. You make me monthly payments for some of the benefits you just talked about, or they just think it's a better risk than trying to invest it in something, or they don't have to think about it as much. In the buyer, there's all kinds of advantages because they don't have a lot of the bank fees or appraisal fees and those type of things that add to the cost. And if you have a good down payment, most sellers who want to do owner carry will let you do it, even if people might be trying to reestablish credit, or maybe there's some work that needs to be done on it so it doesn't qualify for a conventional loan. So there's a lot of reasons why people do owner carry or private money.
Yeah. It's certainly worth considering. If it's whether or not it's appropriate for you is going to be unique and individual. I just want to leave you with sort of this parting thought that if you're about to do a real estate transaction, it is the buyer's prerogative. Typically, you can ask for the title company that you want. So
yeah. In Oregon, it's the client's choice. It's not the realtor. It's not the lender. So we like you to choose AmeriTitle.
There you go.
Again, we have good title companies in Douglas County. So.
Very good. Well, we're out of time for this round, but Barry, thanks again for joining us today, and thank you all for joining us. If you need additional help, please don't hesitate to contact us, 541-375-0898.